A few years back, Sally Coslow was settling into an empty nest. Her two 20-something sons were launched out of the house and into the wider world. Then suddenly and unexpectedly, her sons landed back home. She was startled and depressed to learn that they were part of a much larger trend. According to the Pew Research Center, 1/5 of young adults aged 25 to 34 live in multi-generational households. The bad economy is the main contributing factor, but the trend also reflects shifts in social norms. In her book, Slouching Toward Adulthood: Observations from the Not-So-Empty Nest, Coslow explores these changes and presents her research and interviews on the phrase she calls adult essence. Sally Coslow is, again, the author of the new book, Slouching Toward Adulthood, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Well, it's an absolute delight. This book is fascinating, and obviously it comes from your personal experience. As I mentioned in the introduction, what was it like when you realized that you were not alone in this?
Well, there's great comfort for parents to realize that the situation that they're facing with a young adult who's returned to the nest, that their child is not atypical, but their child actually is the norm. There are a lot of behaviors coming home to live with parents again beyond college is just one of them. There's a very, very different way of living now that people in their 20s melting into their 30s experience than their parents did.
Is there a clear definition of leaving the nest in the sense of, you go to college and then you return right after college, or you go out, you try to make it in the world, and then you come back?
Well, both things happen for many reasons. One is that there's a tremendous amount of student debt loan now, so that on the average it's $45,000 per graduate in the United States. So many young people simply can't afford to be on their own. They are, like it or not, they are forced into being with their parents. Sometimes it's because children are a little bit spoiled and they like the creature comforts that the parents' house affords, that they want the cable television and the house, the freezer full of premium ice cream, and they would like their mother still doing their laundry. So we see extremes.
It's interesting because, you know, I think of myself as when I went to college and I was working in radio, and I don't know if you know this, Sally, but sometimes journalists and radio people don't get paid a lot.
I never noticed that. I know. I've been editor for decades.
I didn't know if that was a shock to you or not. And you know, you had, and there was that comfort, and both my parents said, well, okay, you know, stay here. We'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then it took maybe 2 years. I got a full-time job and then, you know, married, and then I went out. But I don't know how else the kids do it, right? I mean, in the sense of when I talk to students today about, journalism in particular, of how else do you do it without having that footing? But it seems like what you're talking about is a little bit more.
Well, there used to be a tremendous eagerness for baby boomers to become adults. People wouldn't be caught dead going home to live unless with their parents. And they wanted, when I went to college, a lot of people tried to finish college in 3 years instead of four. Now it's unusual for people to finish in 4 years because many people take 5 or 6 years. There's just a slower, that's why I called it slouching toward adulthood. There's a slower incline toward becoming an adult. And part of that reason, I think, is that baby boomers themselves don't want to age much. We see that reflected in all the joint replacements and the Botox and the hair color and just the general attitude of a baby boomer parents, people in their 50s, early 60s, wanting to feel like they're still 35 or 45, which is all well and good, but if you're that age as a parent, the message it sends to your child is that there's all the time in the room to make decisions about what you might want to do when you graduate from college. There's not necessarily a lot of thought when kids are in college about where the jobs might be later on. Everyone's encouraged to follow their dreams. This is the standard commencement speech. have encouraged their children to pursue their dreams and to want nothing for the best for them. So it's a complicated picture.
So what's too long, do you think? I mean, at what point?
What's too long? It's too long when it starts to get infantilizing and crippling for the young adult, when the young adult doesn't have a plan. And that's where parents tend to bomb, because they don't think that they should be talking about this with their adults, young adults, their adult essence. They treat them, if they're 28, like they're still 18. They don't expect them to kick in financially, and if not financially, at least in doing chores around the house or helping to take care of the lawn or change the oil in the car, whatever would be helpful. It gets to be too long when kids stop making plans and when parents just see them lounging about and maybe depressed. I mean, there are reasons to be depressed if you're a young person in America, because there are 8 people clambering for each job that's available, and many entry-level jobs are unpaid internships. So there's a lot of reason to feel that the younger generation's been screwed, but this is our reality right now. You have to respond to it. You might have to take a job that's not your perfect job or move to a place where there are more opportunities. You may have to reset your goals.
And this goes for the parents and the children, right? I mean, because obviously the young adult is greatly impacted by this, but so is, and for all those economic forces that are impacting the child, so goes it with the parents as well. More time spent at work, more time, more responsibilities, and meanwhile you're also trying to shoulder this other responsibility and be a good parent in the process. That's a really hard mix for everybody.
It's very hard. It's a really tricky dance when you've got if you're a parent and you feel as if your child is floundering. And it's almost irresistible as a parent to rush in and try to solve all their problems. But there's a famous Jonas Salk quote that we all heard, children need roots and wings. And sometimes parents clip their kids' wings if they try to be too helpful. There are certain things in life that you can only teach yourself, how to get along at work, how to accept rejection, how to motivate yourself in the face of rejection to try again. Parents sometimes fall short in trying to do too much, and it turns out to be counterproductive. And it all comes out of a place of love, but it isn't helpful ultimately.
And doesn't it come out of a place of, okay, I'm just going to give it this last push, one last try, and then we can move on
except
from this?
There's usually one more after that and one more after that.
Yeah, but you don't know that going into it. That's the problem, right?
Right. It's not easy. It's not easy to be the kid, but it's also not easy to be the parent, because it's hard to experience any kind of tough love as a parent. But sometimes that's what you need to offer.
When it came to your personal situation, is there any aspect of it that you look back fondly on of what you experienced?
Absolutely. I was thrilled when I heard that my son was 25 and he was moving from San Francisco, returning to New York. I was very happy because we hadn't had much time alone with this young guy in a long time, because he had a younger brother, so we hadn't focused on him alone for years. And it was wonderful. In the beginning, he came back for a job, and then the job fell through. And then he started seeming pretty laid back, too laid back for the standards of my husband and myself. And we heard he actually had been offered a job, but it wasn't in any way his ideal job, so he was going to decline it. And we thought he was crazy. And we pushed him to take it, and he took it. And then he moved out into an apartment with a bunch of guys in Brooklyn, and it all had a very happy ending. But I think if we hadn't pushed him, I don't even know how much time would have gone by until the next job offer would have come through, because I don't think he was that motivated. There was no stigma in being unemployed.
And
there's so many young people unemployed that there's a lot of comfort in the numbers.
Yeah, and that's become the norm now, hasn't it?
Well, it's not completely the norm. I mean, there are many exceptions to this rule. I mean, there are many people who go right on to law school or medical school or right on to becoming a teacher. But there also are so many people unemployed. I mean, and so many people living at home and so many people who owe money that you can easily find other people just like you, and it can slow down your push toward resolving the situation by looking around and thinking, well, he's, you know, this is what he's doing too, and you can start to feel that it's too normal.
I saw two sides of this. One was at a college commencement where I heard the speaker basically say, you have incredible challenges now because most of you won't be able to find employment and certainly not be able to find employment in the fields in which you were chosen. And that struck me. And then also my niece just started to go to college, and I was at a the introductory seminar where, you know, we were dropping her off kind of thing. And the person said, you come into this and you look, and we know that it's going to be a really rough road. We hope that you'll find work, but obviously there's no guarantees. But I don't know if that is realistic thinking or that it perpetuates this idea that, again, unemployment is sort of is the norm, or can be more accepted. I shouldn't say the norm, but more accepted.
Well,
and as you say, you know, your son becomes, you know, too complacent with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think actually there should be step two for those pep talks or those sort of anti-pep talks that you heard, because the second step should be, so in the face of this situation, this is what I suggest that you do, and maybe you consider not going to the most popular places to live in the United States, like New York and Washington, D.C. and L.A. and San Francisco. Maybe you go to flyover country where, I mean, I happen to hail from Fargo, North Dakota. And North Dakota has the lowest unemployment in the United States. They have jobs that go begging. They sometimes have to recruit people to go to college there, and it's really a very nice place to live, although it is rather cold in the winter. So you might want to rethink where you're going to live, and you might want to rethink what you're going to major in college. Maybe you don't want to be a dance major with a minor in the history of fashion. Maybe you want a job in the healthcare industry. Maybe you want something connected to the environment or some kind of engineering where there are lots of jobs. I think that this is where both parents and students fall down. There's too much of a, well, college is strictly for exploration. It shouldn't be to prepare you to work. But maybe there should be a bit more thought on the latter.
Sally Koslow is the author of Slouching Toward Adulthood, Observations from the Not-So-Empty Nest. The book is published by Viking. Sally, it's a great thrill to have you on the program. I thank you so much, and I wish you all the luck in the world with the book and the work.
Thank you very much.
A great pleasure.
It.
Thank you.
Okay.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.